Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
So I get asked to MC a lot of things, and Anna does as well, and I go along for the ride. And pre-pandemic, it was often that we do that stuff, but one of the events that I really was excited to be part of happened in December, and it was an event that generated $254,000 in donations for a cause that I think is important, and I bet you will as well. Fuel the Future was the name of this thing, and it was a partnership between the Hopscotch Foundation, which is a volunteer-powered organization that really attacks food insecurity in Portland, and also from Sport Oregon and Sport Oregon's foundation that teamed up with this thing. I was happy to be a part of it. Jim Etzel is the CEO of Sport Oregon. Dave Gunderson is the heart and soul behind the Hopscotch Foundation. And those two gentlemen are going to be joining me now here as I punch them both up. Welcome, guys. I appreciate you making time. Let's start first with Dave Gunderson. Dave, I had coffee with you years ago. You said you were doing this thing to help kids and food. And I thought, oh, I'll give Dave a couple months. Here you are all these years later, and you're feeding kids. Tell us what you do.
Hey, that's probably what I do is I feed kids. And I started this over 5 years ago. I wanted to improve youth nutrition and increase youth activity in Portland in the low-income communities where kids just aren't getting enough healthy food, and we want to get them moving. And so that's what my vision was, and is why I started Hopscotch.
Now, you have continued this thing for several years and for 5 years, and in a normal year, on a daily basis, what does the organization do?
Well, is that pre-pandemic or post?
Let's talk pre-pandemic, just to normalize it.
Yeah, I was really working a ton with the high school sports teams. There's five of them I work with and had for a long time, and I get them healthy food. I provide team meals before the games. I make sure they, when they go out on the field to practice, that they have nourishment that they need. And it was, and then I, after a few more steps, we started the elementary school program and middle school. And now pre-pandemic, we were over thousands of kids getting healthy food on a regular basis, that being so important. No cameo appearances. We show up and we're there from then on out, and people see that. And so that's really what I want, or I did focus on, and I want to get back to focusing on, but this pandemic has, I've moved from the kids to the kids and their families and now to whole communities that we're feeding. Schools were locked last March, and we couldn't get in. And so we had to change our game plan on the fly, and we have. We've grown and filled a huge void, so I'm proud of that.
Dave Gunderson, that's who you're hearing from, of the Hopscotch Foundation. Also on the call, Jim Etzel, the CEO of Sport Oregon. Sport Oregon Foundation partnered up with Hopscotch Foundation in December. $254,000 raised. Jim, why was that important to Sport Oregon?
Well, our foundation is about breaking down barriers for especially underserved youth communities to physical activity. And, you know, on the surface, you think hunger and sports, it just doesn't jump out as an obvious connection. But one of our past presidents, board presidents, Bob Gregg, good friends of Dave's, introduced Dave to our board several years ago. And Dave made a grant request, and we were pretty inspired by the story. And a couple of the kids that had benefited came in and talked to us. And it was all of a sudden the connection became obvious. If kids are hungry, they're not going to be physically active, or they're not going to go play sports or any other school activity for that matter, whether it's dance or band or whatever. So, that's how we initially got involved, and we did a subsequent grant and always stayed in touch. And then Dave came in and saw me this summer and said, "Hey, it's getting big. The need here, it's out of control." His backers had encouraged him to, you know, how do we raise the profile of what we're doing and do a fundraiser? But, you know, Dave never talks about it, but he's all volunteers, and they're busy doing what they need to do to help our community. And we have the resources to, the people resources to, and the expertise to put on an event. And it just seemed like a real natural fit. Our foundation and his foundation, they both really have the same target. And so we figured it out. And 10 weeks later, we had an event. We didn't know what to expect. So it was really gratifying because it really exceeded all our wildest expectations. And we had pretty good expectations, but didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, you guys, I thought, did a phenomenal job, because I think a lot of charities during this time are just not sure what to do. There's no banquet availability. So a lot of golf tournaments got canceled. And so I think finding a creative way using a virtual fundraiser, you guys raised $254,000. I want to applaud both of you, both organizations, Hopscotch Foundation, Sport Oregon. And neither one of you will take a victory lap, so I'm going to push you out there. I mean, Dave, you are the heart and soul of this thing. And Jim Etzel, you're connected like none other. Like, you're the wolf, man. If people need to get things done, you call Jim Etzel. He's the guy who's connected. It's amazing to see you guys partner up. I was really, really inspired to see you guys work together.
Yeah, it is a joy to have. And then, you know, I remember the Sports Authority, a very close friend of mine, started that in the early 90s. And to think that here Jim and I are looking at these communities and joining together to figure out just how we can help, how we can feed these kids, how we can provide even more avenues for activity. And like Jim said, it could be drama. It could be band, music. We really want to give kids a choice of alternatives and not have it just be football and basketball. I think we're well on our way.
Now, Dave, your son, Ryan, Oregon State football player, you had three kids who were Pac-12 athletes, but Ryan goes on now to be a coach at San Jose State. You had to be pretty proud of that. That was all going on at the same time.
It's been a wild year, and wow, if you followed San Jose State's season, it was like no other. But they persevered. They got through it. Proud to say that after some really tough years, they were ranked 24th in the country in the final AP poll. And, it's in a very strange year. They prospered. And I drew a lot of inspiration from that. I know other people did.
Jim Etzel at Sport Oregon, you know, aside from this fundraiser, which was fantastic, you've got a lot going on as well with your organization. Where do you stand right now? What's on your short list of things to do for Sport Oregon and sports in our state?
Hyper-focused on helping this city and this state get back on our feet. we all know what's happened here over the last 10 months to our community and continues to pull us down, and not just the pandemic, it's the, you know, the social unrest, and that we got some things to overcome to get people to want to come back and compete in Portland, Oregon, and the greater state. And so in our hospitality industry and our local economy and businesses, you know, bars, restaurants, shops, you name it, are all desperate for tourism. We are the pipeline for sports tourism. Just got off a call just before this with a group of hotel general managers, and we're just trying to identify, our team's out there hustling, trying to identify, you know, opportunities to bring in the community, and then trying to find the balance of all the other things we do. But I will tell you that, you know, ending our the pandemic year on a high note with Dave on the Fuel of Future, I mean, to be aligned with what I'll call a community hero like Dave and someone that's an inspiration. I want to thank Dave for all that he does. I want to thank him for kind of opening a door we might not have opened right away about where a sweet spot can be for our foundation. We got a great network. We got 150 plus corporations and individuals that financially support our mission each year. That's what, how we open our doors. You know, he stepped in with this idea, and it inspired our membership, and his longtime donors inspired our membership. But it really showed that we have an organization that can elevate and amplify someone or an organization like Hopscotch and the work that Dave does. And I think this is a model for future partnerships, and we're going to continue every year with Dave and Fuel the Future. That was the first annual event. And we can't wait to grow it. But I want to thank Dave for what he does, and also just I think it was a byproduct, but it opened our eyes to how we can leverage our organization to the greatest community benefit. And for that, that's what excites me, and I'm thankful for.
Jim Edsel, CEO of Sport Oregon, Dave Gunderson, the heart and soul of the Hopscotch Foundation, $254,000 raised in the month of December for that great organization and great cause. And I know there are a lot of kids out there that are going to be fed, that will find food, whether they're in school or homeschooling, that didn't otherwise have it available to them. I appreciate what they're doing in the community. All right, leave it right here. Our Culligan Water Cooler Report is coming up. On the show, we do the Culligan Water Cooler Report.
Meet me at the water cooler. Welcome to the Culligan Water Cooler Report. If we're talking about it, they'll be talking about it. Brought to you by Culligan Water Company.
I want to talk about the Super Bowl. Guess what? Budgets are getting tight. Because I know this because Pepsi has announced that it will not be airing ads during the Super Bowl this year. They are taking the Super Bowl off. They say that they're going to be putting their budget instead into the 12-minute Pepsi Super Bowl halftime show. Is that not advertising? Is Pepsi just telling us, hey, we're sponsoring the halftime show by telling us, hey, we're not advertising during the big game? Pepsi will not be having a 1-minute commercial or 60-second commercial or 30-second commercial. Instead, they're taking the 12-minute halftime show. I think that's advertising, even though it's not a commercial. By the way, Frito-Lay has laid out their plans. I love how the commercials now, which used to be a surprise, are now being, of course, they'll be released early so they can get on YouTube and Vimeo and Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else, but they're laying out the plans even before they shoot the commercial. Frito-Lay has announced what they're going to be doing during the Super Bowl. They've got Troy Aikman, Deion Sanders, Eli, and Peyton Manning. They are going to be talking about the revived Snack 3D, Doritos 3D, and the new Cheetos Crunch Pop Mix. Do you guys like the commercials still? Peter, are you a commercial person?
You know, I did when I was a kid. I don't really care now. I mean, I do watch them. I don't really tend to get up during the game. I'll kind of chuckle and, you know, well, that's clever. But I don't geek out. I don't need to run to social media and talk about how amazing, you know, the latest, you know, Levi's commercial or Ford or whatever it is. It's just, I don't know. It's advertising. It's commercialism.
I still like the commercials. I still want them to be good. And I don't want the spoilers. I don't want to see them early on social media. I want to see them during the game. I think for me, because those commercial breaks feel so damn long during the Super Bowl, I want that to be entertainment too. And I'm well aware that there's a lot of people in the room when I'm watching the game who don't give a rip about the game. So if they're entertained and they're going to stick with it, that makes it more fun. So I am a commercial person. Other NFL news, Justin Herbert in the Hall of Fame. Did you guys know this?
No.
Justin Herbert already in the Hall of Fame, or at least his jersey is. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has asked for the jersey that Herbert wore in Week 11 when he set the new rookie record for consecutive games with two or more touchdown passes.
Wow.
He set all kinds of records. He had most passing yards by a rookie, most touchdowns by a rookie, most completions by a rookie, most haircuts that got trolled on social media by a rookie, and he will be the Offensive Rookie of the Year. And he'll finish in front of Vikings' Justin Jefferson. Those are going to be the two. But Justin Herbert with his jersey in the Hall of Fame, I think that's kind of cool if you're an Oregon fan. You're not going to read about that anywhere else or hear about it anywhere else. That's why you come to the show. But do you think Justin Herbert gets in the Hall of Fame? Let's do our thumbs up, thumbs down. I don't want a bunch of hemming and hawing like we did earlier, guys. It's thumbs up, thumbs down. You get one bullet point sentence to say why you went thumbs up or thumbs down. But Justin Herbert in the Hall of Fame. Zach, go.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to go ahead and say it. I'm an optimist, and I'm going to be hopeful he's going to make it. I'm just going to say he's the next Tom Brady, John. Bold wow. take.
Wow.
Peter Sampson.
I'm not quite
thumbs up,
saying...
Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Thumbs up. I mean, all he needs to do is just play at a relatively comparable level to he played his rookie year.
All he has to do is be great.
That's great, no big deal.
Here's my thing. I'll go thumbs up, assuming he stays healthy, because I think that's the big thing. Because I think the Chargers are going to build this team around him. I think he has a better shot than Marcus Mariota, who he won a Heisman Trophy, of getting himself in there. But it's going to take the Chargers being more than an afterthought in that L.A. market. So I will also go thumbs up, and I feel like we're being homers here. But, you know, I'll go thumbs up with that. Who's, like, if we look at greatest Oregon quarterback ever to play in the NFL, or a greatest quarterback from the state of Oregon to ever play in the NFL, I think we can go a lot of directions. Dan Fouts certainly comes to mind. Norm Van Brocklin comes to mind. Of course, we have guys like Chris Miller, who played at a high level. Neil Lomax, who was at Portland State and went to the NFL. Marcus Mariota, Joey Harrington, Derek Anderson. We've got, you know, guys who stuck in the league maybe longer than others thought they would. Matt Moore, who's had a nice NFL career, and Kellen Clemens, who's had a nice NFL career. Like, if I give you guys a starting quarterback, I'm not taking Justin Herbert. I'm taking Dan Fouts as my starter until I see Justin Herbert do this over a period of time. But who are you guys taking?
Oh, I agree 100%. It's got to be Dan Fouts.
Yeah, that's kind of before me, John, but from everything I've seen and heard, it's got to be Dan Fouts. And yeah, I mean, you can't argue with his career.
Norm Van Brocklin's in the Hall of Fame. If we talk about, you know, guys with, you know, played college at Oregon, fourth round pick, you know, here's a guy coached in the NFL as a head coach with two organizations, won a couple championships in the NFL, was the NFL's most valuable player. Why does Norm Van Brocklin, the Dutchman, get no love?
Because he was born in 1926, apparently. That was well before my time. That's amazing, though.
That's the problem. I love how Zach says Dan Fouts is before his time, and I just slap my forehead. Because it's true. I'm not knocking you, but I am also going, man, we're aging out here on this show. I want your take. Quarterbacks with ties to the state of Oregon. Where does Justin Herbert, where is he going to rank? And let's not, look, we all went thumbs up on the Hall of Fame for Justin Herbert after his rookie season. We might have done the same damn thing with Marcus Mariota after his rookie season. But Norm Van Brocklin made 9 Pro Bowls, guys. And, you know, let's not forget him. 9 Pro Bowls and certainly a lot of time, you know, spent in the winner's circle in the NFL. There was a really interesting stat that I saw on what on the game that used to be called the Civil War, and I'm trying to bring it up here on my laptop as I talk about it. But it was a really interesting stat on Oregon quarterbacks who played in the NFL and played in the Civil War, and I want to bring this up because we don't often get called like a great quarterback state. Like when people think about the, you know, the state of Oregon, they don't talk about the fact that we have had seven first round NFL draft picks who played quarterback in this state. Marcus Mariota, Joey Harrington, Akili Smith, Chris Miller, George Shaw, Terry Baker, and Justin Herbert all took snaps in Civil War games. Dan Fouts is not on that list, notice. Because Dan Fouts was drafted in the third round of the 1973 NFL draft. Zach, how old were you in 1973?
I was negative 18 years old.
Yeah, that's nuts to me. So, also, by the way, Heisman Trophy winners, Terry Baker, Marcus Mariota, those two guys we know. But also, I had this weird stat about quarterbacks who were on Oregon's team, and I've got to pull it up. It's a crazy stat about the talent that that Oregon had at quarterback. Of the guys I mentioned, you know, it's interesting to me that we don't get more credit in this state for developing quarterbacks. Nobody really talks about the fact that, you know, there's some pretty good players that came out of that era and came out of these two universities who have gone on to play quarterback in the NFL. And that's not even including some guys who are journeyman players, like some of the players I mentioned before and some others. Why do you guys think we don't get credit in our state for developing quarterbacks at the next level?
In the college ranks?
We don't get the credit for those guys. Like people would think, you know, all those guys played at Oregon or Oregon State.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just one of those things where, you know, like we talk about it, not a lot of people pay attention to the West Coast. They're sleeping. All the people that are, you know, on the polls and that are ranking all these teams and doing all that stuff are on the East Coast. So maybe they're just not paying attention. The West Coast is just slept on, per usual.
All right, here's 1972, Civil War football game. Oregon and Oregon State are playing. You got Dan Fouts playing quarterback at Oregon. And also, among Oregon's quarterbacks, their backup was Norv Turner, who went on to be an NFL coach. And a redshirt quarterback was June Jones, who went on to be an NFL head coach. 1972, Oregon at the quarterback position went first string Dan Fouts, second string Norv Turner, third string redshirt June Jones. All three guys made an impact in the NFL. Nobody talks about that stuff. We have to talk about it. We have to tell our millennials the history of this state. And I know I sound like an old man on my front lawn right now, but it's important that we talk about stuff like this, because if we don't, nobody's going to remember it. Nobody's going to talk about it. You know, Joey Harrington played in three Civil War games, never threw a touchdown pass. Does anybody know that?
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.